We made this.
Throughout my life, the Ten Rings gave our family power. If you want them to be yours one day, you have to show me you are strong enough to carry them.
You are a product of all who came before you. The legacy of your family. You are your mother. And whether you like it or not, you are also your father.
I told my men they wouldn't be able to kill you if they tried. Glad I was right.
You're just a criminal who murders people.
Be careful how you speak to me, boy. You know you're born for peace. I'm done, okay, oh cool, at least you know
I made it. The keys, the phone, the keys, the heart, the release. I thought I could change my name. Start a new life. But I could never escape his shadow.
My son, you can't run from your past.
Is this what you wanted?
You got this.
Thank you. Wing jab, left foot, right hook.
Welcome to Podcast 616, a podcast all about the Marvel Universe for the We Made This podcast network. I'm your host today, Ian Buckley, and today we're going to be diving into the latest entry into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, directed by Destin Daniel Cretton. This latest Marvel film introduces us to Sean, aka Shang-Chi, and his friend Katie as they are drawn into a world of ancient magics and martial arts by his ancient and powerful father, leading his deadly Ten Rings organization. Joining me to discuss Shang-Chi in this episode is my guest, Raymond Liu. How are you today, Raymond?
Hey, what's up, Ian? Hi, everyone. Hi. Good to be back on the We Made This Network. It's kind of where I started my podcasting life. So,
oh, right on. I love that. Yeah. Where was that? Which show were you on?
I have my own show called Real Asian Podcast. For all your listeners, go check it out if you get a chance. And Tony actually helped me get things started with just building out the show and having a place to host and to distribute out to all the podcast platforms. And as I kind of learned the ropes and stuff like that, I ultimately decided to leave the network and start my own thing. Some ideas in the pipeline, but I've connected with one other showrunner and then communicated with Tony. But good to see that you guys are still going strong and all the good content out there. Good to be on the show.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. Welcome back. Really glad to be talking about this movie with you. So let me get your overall thoughts. What did you think of Shang-Chi?
So overall, Shang-Chi, I was really excited about this movie. I knew very little bit about Shang-Chi, the comic book character, so I was super excited to know that it was going to be part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I would say if I had to give it a rating, I'm going to give it 8 out of 10 rings. So the reason why I give it an 8, and me full disclosure to all you listeners out there, I'm an Asian person. So me as an Asian American, sometimes going into these things with big Hollywood movies, there's always some cultural representation, like burden that kind of comes along with these types of movies. I'm the type of person where sometimes there's so much expectation that I don't want to be let down. But thankfully, I was not let down. And I think the biggest thing for me with Shang-Chi when I watched it is that it did not actually, you know, ironically enough, it did not like have any pandering or political undertones that were there trying to force in front of people. It was literally just an action-packed, good fight choreography that had a pretty solid story that really introduced us to the character of Shang-Chi. And I think Simu Liu did an amazing job. Tony Leung is an amazing actor. All those people, all those who are Asian Hong Kong film fans know Tony Leung is a legend. And so to see him on the big Hollywood stage, really incredible. And of course, Michelle Yeoh, can't say enough about her.
Yeah, the cast is just stacked. These are all, I mean, I wasn't really familiar with Simu Liu, but Tony Leung, Michelle Yeoh, I also like Awkwafina. I think she's a lot of fun. Yeah, everyone in this cast was really solid. And yeah, we had a couple of newcomers too, not just to the Marvel Universe, but also to like film acting. I believe the actor who played Sean's sister, whose name I'm going to get wrong, Meng'er Zhang. And I believe, at least according to IMDb, like this was her first film role. So even the unfamiliar faces, I think they did a really nice job here with the cast.
Yeah, definitely. The pretty good chemistry too. You with one of the things I noticed, and I'd really appreciated being someone who grew up watching films of Michelle Yeoh and Tony Leung, or is seeing like the passing of the torch, if you will, passing of the guards of these long, steady generation of actors work with the likes of Awkwafina, Simu, who are coming onto the scene. And I can't imagine during the production and in between sets, they're sharing knowledge, sharing stories, just like, this is how, you know, I would do it as an actor from a creative, but also in show business, I got to imagine. So the cast was pretty spot on. I'm also a big fan of I think he's an MMA fighter. He's the big. He was the Razor Fist.
Oh, Razor Fist. Yeah.
Good old Razor Fist. Because he was in Creed 2, and I was like, oh, it's cool. It's nice to see that he landed a part in this movie.
Okay. Yeah. He looked. He had a familiar face. I couldn't quite place it. That's what it was.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. He made a really good point about the kind of passing of the torch. I mean, they even have, you know, a literal scene with Michelle Yeoh passing on her knowledge to the Sean's character, Shang-Chi. And the significance of that, I think, for audiences who have, like yourself, watched these actors growing up in all of, you know, Chinese film, that probably made an impact on all of the people in the audience who were watching those characters.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the actors, even like the smaller roles, the grandma of Awkwafina's family, she was the one who was, you know, giving afterlife treats to the grandpa, stuff like that.
Yeah, when you two getting married, yeah.
She was one of the aunts in the Joylight Club, which is a very prominent movie.
Oh,
within the Asian American community. And then there's Guangbo, who's the arrow instructor guy that Awkwafina was interacting a lot. He played the landlord in Kung Fu Hustle, so he played one of the, you know, one of the good landlords in that movie. And growing up, that I love that movie. And so when I saw him, I was like, why does he look so familiar? I couldn't quite pinpoint it until I saw the IMDb and I was like, ah, there you go. He was in that movie. And I loved him. Like he had a somewhat smaller role, but whatever screen time that he worked with, he optimized and maximized his screen time because he just nailed it.
Yeah. He was another familiar face that I was really happy to see. And you're right. They were able to fill in the margins of this movie with a lot of little characters who were recognizable faces to folks who were plugged into Asian cinema for the last 20 or 30 years. It was really a nice touch that they put in this movie. What about the director, Destin Daniel Cretton? Had you seen either of his two previous movies?
I know that he directed Just Mercy. Am I correct there?
Yep. Yes, yeah. You are correct there.
Saw Just Mercy. Loved it. He worked with, I'm a big Michael B. Jordan fan. So I think I knew his name just by out of curiosity after I watched Just Mercy, and then I watched Shang-Chi, and it didn't put two and two together, you know. That was the only other movie that I watched, and I know he's done other films, so now I'm really curious to see, you know, his other works. But definitely this one shows that he can definitely handle the big stage. You know, I can't imagine there's nothing like directing a big Marvel movie. How about you?
Yeah, I saw his first movie, Short Term 12, with Brie Larson. Actually, it was it was funny to see her pop up in the spoilers. She pops up in the mid credits, post credit scene.
Right.
And that movie's fantastic, intense, but you know, quiet character drama about a substance abuse care facility and the people who work there, as well as the people who stay there. And to go from that to this enormous stage, like you said, is really fun to see. And I think he handled it really well. I like that Marvel's giving these directors coming out of the indie scene like him and Chloe Zhao with The Eternals in just a couple of months is going to be another one of these directors who are coming. You know, obviously she's coming off of an Oscar win, but her background was in these, you know, small, quiet character dramas, and they're being given the reins to these enormous franchises, these movies that are now launching kind of phase four of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That's great. And I'm actually reading the little taglines and synopsis of Short Term 12, and I recall Just Mercy. And I guess based off of the three movies with that Destin directed, there's a theme that kind of goes through. He seems to be really, he really likes to make those films that are like redemption stories. You said earlier, Short Term 12 is kind of focused on this guy who's in a lot of hardships. Just Mercy is the kind of same thing. Someone who's wrongfully convicted of a murder, I believe, is the premise of the movie. And then obviously with Shang-Chi, and then you're talking about Wen Wu with Tony Leung's character. He's even though he's the villain, what really made him compelling is that you kind of understood where he was coming from, and he's just trying to do what he thinks he can do to fix his family by way of bringing back his lost wife. And so Destin seems to have this trend of doing a character study of those who are dealing with hardships, pain, you know, agony, all those things, and exploring all of that. And I guess Shang-Chi also deals with that as well as our main protagonist.
Yeah, for sure. And even though the canvas is huge and the budget is huge, the themes that he's dealing with are pretty universal and well understood. I mean, a lot of people can relate to, a lot of children can relate to feeling like they're not living up to the expectations of their elders. And a lot of parents can relate to the feeling like they've let their children down. And these are things that these characters are dealing with that a lot of audience members, regardless of your background or even what kind of movies you typically like to watch, can relate to these themes.
These villains, I the closest parallel that I can equate it to is, you know, Black Panther's villain. Although I do think Killmonger was a much more compelling villain, because same thing where you understood his perspective and he just kind of took it a little bit too far. Wen Wu is similar in that way. He just kind of takes it a little bit too far, all well intentions, but it's a
sort of, you're right. I think Killmonger, you as an audience member are meant to be able to understand him a little bit more. I mean, you know, Tony Leung's character, his arc is essentially he's a bad guy for 1,000 years. He falls in love. He's a good guy for like 10. And then
that's true.
He falls right back off the wagon.
Maybe I'm giving him a little bit too much credit. I'm disregarding the other 1,000 years that he was causing atrocities. But you know, hey, you know what?
You know, we're right.
All in there.
But, But he does have that, he does have that through line that they establish with these little glimpses of flashback that they keep going back to. You know, they establish his through line of genuine love and affection for his wife and his children, even if he has a very warped sense of how that should be expressed.
Right. Because at the end of the day, they do mention like he does ultimately want power. So
yeah,
causing years, toppling over governments, another shadowy organization, you know, murdering people. Dads, right?
Right. What are you going to do?
The typical dad.
So the reviews for this movie have been generally quite positive so far. And I think, I don't think I even gave a rating for myself. I think I'm in the same boat as you. I think I really like this. I think 8 out of 10 rings is just about right for me. We'll talk more about, I think, the specific things we really liked and maybe a couple of the things that didn't work for us as well. But a lot of people seem to be really digging this movie, and so far it's been having really solid box office performance. What do you think the implications are for, or do you think that has any implications for Disney, Marvel, and, you know, Hollywood as a whole? Like, are people just ready to go back to the movies, or is this a specific particular example of one really good movie breaking through?
That's an interesting question, because, you know, you want to say at the end of the day, because it's a good movie will always be able to generate lots of revenue in the box office, right? But coming off of the pandemic, I do have to imagine that some people, and it really depends on where you're watching it, right? Because some areas, the virus or the pandemic is somewhat under control and you're able to go watch it in the theaters. Other places, maybe not so. Where I went to go see the movie theaters, that, you know, it seemed pretty safe, felt pretty safe. The implications of it, I think it does show that we are back and ready to watch movies in the theaters again. Who knows, a couple months from now, you may come back to me and be like, hey, remember that thing you said about people coming back to movie theaters? That ain't happening. But from here, as of today, seems like it's very possible. I think another thing that I have to consider is the whole thing kind of leading up to the movie between Simu Liu and Bob Chapek, where Bob Chapek was said in an earnings call, was they were talking about an experimental theater release with, I believe it was only a 45-day theater release schedule, and they are not planning to do that with Disney Premier Access. So I would say that it does implicate we are ready to go back to the movie theaters. I am curious in terms of, I think it's an interesting thing where Disney makes a lot of money, or can make a lot of money, with the whole Disney Plus Premier Access, because the money goes straight to Disney.
Sure.
But I guess with them choosing to stick to the theaters, there's nothing like the movie going experience that you could, you know, that you could replace. And I think a movie like this, I definitely agree with that, because of all the action. Maybe it just wouldn't have been the same if I was watching it at home.
Yeah, one thing that this movie definitely has is spectacle, You know, you would hope, right? You're going to see a Marvel movie. It's a big screen experience. You know, you're going to see it in a movie theater. You want that big screen experience, and this movie really delivered that. I thought the spectacle was all pretty cool. You know, there's a lot of CGI at certain points. Every once in a while, it kind of took me out of it. But that's just kind of every Marvel movie these days. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be one or two of those shots where you're looking at it and you're going like, that's not quite working. That's
like clearly they're standing on or sitting on a green blob thing.
Right. Like this is very clearly a computer generated bus flying through, you know, like it just doesn't quite have that texture of reality. That rings true to the eye, but they're getting closer, you know, with every movie that comes out, and it's still, by and large, like 98% of it is working. And this movie in particular, like for such an action forward movie, I thought the action was really effectively filmed. What did you think of the action in the movie?
I think it was incredible. You know, one of the things that going into the movie, there's you knew that Shang-Chi was a master in martial arts, and then you also throw in the tropes that Asian characters typically have, where they're always just known for kung fu martial arts. But it's not just that, right? We know that Shang-Chi is really good at hand-to-hand combat, but there's a layer to him that we're seeing the origin story. I really appreciated the style that the fighting scenes were shot. You know, and one example was when Wenwu and Li, his soon-to-be lover, they were having that moment where they're like passing by each other and they have this stare down and they like lock eyes as they're sparring together. That is very typical in a lot. If you watch like old Chinese films, martial arts films, they always do that where there's like a stare down between two opponents. And it could either be in a very adversarial way, kind of depending on the music and the way it's shot, but it could also be in a romantic way. If you watch The Grandmaster, which is a movie by Wong Kar-wai, which is another movie that Tony Leung is in. There's a scene in there with Gong Er, played by Zheng Jiyi, literally the same kind of thing where they're passing by each other, looking at each other. And it's like, you could speculate that that is the moment that they fall in love. They're just thinking,
sure,
this person matches me in my level of skill in martial arts. And that's just so, the motif of that and the style of that is amazing, but also the choreography itself, like the bus scene was great with, where a lot of it was long shots where it wasn't like quick cut, zoomed in. You get to actually see all the action. I thought it was incredible. And watching it in IMAX, even better, right?
Yeah. Again, credit to Destin Daniel Cretton. I think, I don't remember which critic said it. It was probably Roger Ebert. Something about the thing that really sets a great director apart is whether or not they know how to film action. And he didn't really get an opportunity to do a whole lot of that in Short Term 12 and Just Mercy, but he really got a chance to show that he knows how to direct action. Because like you said, you're exactly right. Like this bus sequence, it's like they took all the memes people have been coming up with about how Marvel loves their hallway fights. And they figured, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to do a hallway fight that moves downhill very
fast.
What
is that? Oh, that's basically a bus.
Basically a bus in San Francisco. Exactly. And it's a fantastic set piece. You're right, because they do these long takes where you basically feel like you're actually taking in all of the action. You're seeing the moves. There's no cheats. At least the cheats are really well hidden, either digitally or in the filming and choreography, so that you have all of the skill and prowess of these actors on full display, and you're not quick cutting, chopping up these action scenes so that they're incoherent. It's really, really cool.
It was really cool, and I really appreciate it. I want to say the bus scene was the major. Well, I mean, other than the first scene where Wenwu and Li are fighting, but the real, you get to see Shang-Chi in action, and you're like, oh man, all right, this is where it's at. And I think in the trailer, you see the first half of it, and then the stakes get much, much higher when you actually watch the movie, where like the bus is cut in half and he's got to save people from falling out the window, all these things. And it's like that, of course, they got to raise the stakes, make sure it's a superhero movie, right? So the risks are always insane. I think the training that they did, like I noticed all the different fight styles with, you know, wushu style, Muay Thai, like boxing and just Street Fighter, and the Wing Chun, like all of that is just paying homage to all like the Bruce Lees of the world, the Tony Young and the Jet Lees and all those like martial artists on screen. So I really appreciated that they handled that with care and made it intentional to making sure that it looked real, you know?
The details are there to be appreciated by the people that are going to notice them. I really appreciate that level of care to adding texture to these movies. I wouldn't necessarily have picked up on all of the different styles, like whether or not they were present, A, but being accurately represented. But the people who are going to recognize that, like, that's really goddamn cool that that's in the movie.
Yeah, What was your favorite fight scene?
Oh, it's got to be the bus. Yeah, that bus. The bus scene was a great mix of. It also was Marvel humor working really well, which it doesn't always. But like the bus passengers, the commentary, like all of like Awkwafina's commentary, like all of that in that scene, it felt like a really good distillation of Marvel action at its best.
Yeah. Aside from the bus scene, I think I really enjoyed the fight between Shang-Chi and his dad when Shang-Chi started to be able to like control half of the rings. Because also very impressed because you still had to have some choreography in there, but then now they had to CGI like the rings and they're definitely hooked up with all these cables with flying around, stuff like that. But it still looked, you know, pretty legit and it looked like a Capcom versus Marvel video game sequence where, you know, there's just a lot of shooting at each other and like lights kind of going, all the smoke and everything. But it was really, really impressive the way they shot that. I think it would just like look real.
It was, and you could tell what was going on without dialogue. Like it was shot, yeah, like the story of their life was sort of told through their combat, and all of that came through just purely visually and with the soundtrack as well. And again, credit to the filmmaking. I thought that scene was really powerful as well. Good call.
Yep.
And I didn't know, like yourself, I wasn't really familiar with these comics or the character. I had no concept of how they were going to visualize these 10 rings, but I thought they were pretty fucking cool. I think they managed
cool
to conceptualize this kind of weird esoteric weapon in a way that I thought was really compelling. And now I'm kind of hyped to see Shang-Chi wield them himself and see what he can do with them.
It's going to be really interesting what role the 10 rings will play in the larger MCU. Because as we know, like relics and artifacts in the MCU have always kind of flew under the radar until like there's like something that really connects like the huge plot line. So just very similar to like the Infinity Gems, right? This is like the first ancient technology that we know nothing about and that is on the Avengers radar. So it's going to be really interesting how it plays throughout, you know, the storyline.
Because we don't get to learn really what the origin of them was. We just get this sort of this legend of Shang-Chi's father had these rings come into his possession somehow 1,000 years ago in the past, and they have kept him alive. So they have some sort of magical or possibly alien technology that is able to not just allow him to like project power outward in a lot of really cool ways, but also extends his life seemingly like perfectly. Like, I don't think the implication is that he didn't, while he wore those rings, he didn't age a day.
I mean, also Tony Leung didn't age a day too. I was like, man, that guy's got to keep in shape all the time. He looks good.
I swear to God, like I watched in the Mood for Love not that long ago. I swear to God, he doesn't look that much older.
He looked the same.
21 like, years ago.
You're like,
it's 21 years ago.
Yeah. You're like, Tony, do you have the real 10 rings? You're wearing it somewhere.
Seriously.
Yeah. What I am interested too, what I was thinking is, you know, leading up to the 10 rings or when we were having the 10 rings, you know, his character trait where he wanted power and then the 10 rings basically amplified that. And then when he removed the 10 rings, that's when he started a family. He was a lot more chill. You know, he was not evil, I guess, in a sense. But when he lost his wife, he put the 10 rings back on. So that to me, is it going to be where the 10 rings can, you know, amplify a character trait or personality trait of the owner, of the holder? So what does that mean for Shang-Chi now that he has it, right? I'm very curious. I would love to see that fleshed out in future movies. So that's
a good point. Yeah. Whether it's a corrupting influence itself or it just amplifies some trait. I think the I think the super serum does does that, or was alleged to have done that. You know, like
that's why I was just thinking the same thing, right?
Right. Yeah. So like that's why Captain America becomes Captain America, whereas someone who is more villainous inside
an agent
become a super villain. Agent. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be really interesting. I have, you know, I have more speculation for that with regarding Captain Marvel, but we can save that for the post credits.
Oh yeah, we'll save that when we talk about post credits. Yeah, yeah, for sure. But yeah, like something in that scene that you mentioned where he takes over the ring, you do get a sense that something different is happening. You get the visual, you know, cue because they change colors when they are operated by him, but also the way that they interact with him is different. It's, you know, they were circling around him in a more defensive pattern, like he was using them almost more defensively rather than offensively, you know, deflecting blows rather than delivering them. And I wonder if that's going to be kind of how he wields them going forward and whether they just respond a little bit differently to him than they did his father, whether they almost have not a personality, but whether they are reactive specifically to the person wielding them.
Like a Mjolnir kind of thing where if you're worthy, you know, you can acquire it.
Yeah. And if you are a certain type of person, you can do certain things with these. Like, I don't know if his father could have done the crazy thing that he did to banish the dragon at the end. Spoiler alert, the good guys win at the end. You know, I don't know what that thing was, but I don't know if his father could have done it.
Yeah.
What other sequences or scenes really worked for you in the movie? What else did you really dig?
Definitely the visual and the color scheme, something I picked out of. It felt, well, number one, it was easy to know who was fighting who because you have colorful costumes on one side and then you have black costumes on the other side. So that was easy and enjoyable to watch. Ultimately, they came together to fight. Oh, Trevor Slattery, I think, was hilarious. The tie-in with the Mandarin, the callback to Iron Man 3. And that's basically how they corrected that. They're like, here's the reason why we had that character in there. And so Trevor Slattery was something that was really funny. And Morris, the little turkey, furry turkey thing, that was really cute. I think that's just Disney's way to start selling merchandise and increasing sales to kids. I was gonna throw in something cute.
We're going to see every single mythological creature that we saw represented on screen in a store somewhere. Those nine-tailed foxes, those are showing up. Yeah, no, good call. Yeah, I really liked what they did with the Ben Kingsley character, bringing him back. That was a fun, you know, I don't know if that had been spoiled by any of the trailers. I was kind of avoiding them because I don't like being spoiled for things. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that was something that people knew was going to happen, but I was surprised by it. So I thought that was a really fun surprise. And yeah, his whole little mythological faceless turkey thing, Morris, was super adorable. I think you're right. Yeah. The merchandising options are through the roof with that thing. And yeah, I really liked I thought the comic relief in Marvel movies doesn't always work as well. And I think by and large, the humor did in this. I think, you know, I dig Awkwafina. I think she's funny. I thought all of her shtick in this movie was, she wasn't like this wacky cartoonish character that I was a little worried they might make her be. Cause she doesn't, you know, she can act, she doesn't have to be that character. So I was a little worried she would just be the comic relief, but she was actually a grounded, real, like friendship / possible future romantic partner presence for this character. And I really appreciated that they didn't just make her be the funny one, the silly one, the goofy one, the one who's, you know, she's pratfalling and we're laughing at her, you know, while all this other stuff is going on. Like, yeah, she's doing stuff over here. She's being funny, but she's also doing meaningful things and she's a welcome presence in the movie so that when she, again, spoiler alert, saves the day at the end, like, I think if she hadn't been as well established up to that point, if that moment had happened in another movie, that would get a groan from the audience maybe. Mm-hmm. But because she was set up really well, and because we dig her by the time we get to that point and we're rooting for her to do the thing that she does, when she does it, we're like, fuck yeah, Awkwafina. I thought that was, I really appreciated that about her character. I thought that there were, you know, there was an opportunity for that to go in a bad direction, and I thought they handled her character really well.
I was also, when I was watching it, I knew that had to happen because Guangbo, before he died, told her, he's like, aim for the throat. But then there was kind of a long sequence where you see Shang-Chi and his sister are still on the dragon, and the good dragon is getting its soul sucked out. I was like, hurry up, Katie. Mm-hmm. Hurry up. I mean, I knew it was coming, but I was just like, man, they're taking a long time for this arrow to come.
Yeah, the tension is real. You're waiting for it. And it's like, yeah. Oh, man, they are just stretching this moment.
Stretching this out. And of course, you see the arrow slowly come. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great because you know that moment's coming, and yet they're able to stretch that time out and keep you in suspense. And mm-hmm. that's because they've kept us invested in it.
Any time with the comic relief, I was worried too that, you know, the first few jokes that Awkwafina landed on her character were funny, but then immediately I'm always like, okay, are they going to overdo it? Sometimes the comic relief just overstays her welcome, but she didn't do that at all. Like you said, she was very integral to the storyline, important to the storyline, and you were invested with her. And she played a key part of like Shang-Chi's storyline. I am curious what your thoughts are, if you thought that there would be like a kiss scene, or if she would have played a more romantic role for Shang-Chi, and if you think that would have maybe taken away from the movie.
I certainly wasn't expecting it sort of one way or the other. I think it, at least based on what the kind of the movie presented to us, I think there's probably in audiences, myself included, a general maybe expectation that if you have these two characters in this kind of movie that, yeah, they probably are going to, or you wouldn't be surprised if they end up together at the end of the movie. And there's some subtlety, there's a subtle hint at it. I think they touch hands or they hold hands in that final scene of the movie, implying that there's maybe some closeness there that wasn't there before. Maybe their relationship has changed a little bit. Yeah.
Saving the world, how to do it.
Yeah, saving, if nothing else is going to do it, saving the world ought to. I think the other thing, you know, kind of because they're brought into adventure together. Sort of at the end, which we'll get to. I think that kind of implies, again, that their fates are entwined, and maybe it remains as just very good friends. And honestly, like, great. I think these movies can use more relationships that are not just, you know, standard romantic relationships at their core. That's great if they end up just staying friends. But I could also see that their fates being intertwined together implies that there's something more for them in the future.
Yeah, I am curious in terms of what role Katie will play in the larger MCU, because at the end, Wong asked for both of them, knowing that Shang-Chi is the only one with superpowers, but Katie is included. Now, it could be just like, Katie, you were there the whole time. You might as well come for the ride kind of thing. But yeah. I gotta imagine.
Hey, it would be really awkward if she just got left behind at the restaurant there. Like, yeah. It's not like it's a secret to her. She was there.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So they're like, you might as well come. And then I'm curious in terms of where they're going to have her develop different storylines and what role she will play. So pretty awesome.
Now, I know you said you didn't have as much familiarity with the comics. Do you know, is she a character from the comics? Does she exist?
I don't know. I don't think so. Okay. I think there's something created. I only know the origin of Shang-Chi and like some of the differences between the movie and the comics. Obviously, like the two biggest, I mean, there's a lot, but the two biggest one is, instead of Wen Wu, it's his comic book dad is Fu Manchu. and Fu Manchu, in the comics. Yeah. Yeah. There's a whole nother reason why wasn't displayed on screen. And I'm really glad it wasn't. Yeah. Yeah. That would have been a real bad faux pas. God. Yeah. So they didn't include Fu Manchu. And then there's also the Mandarin, which is a real comic book villain. And so they just ended up kind of meshing the Mandarin and like Fu Manchu with the Shang-Chi storyline. Shang-Chi's mom is actually a white woman in the comics. In this case, it was not. Yeah. His sister does exist. And I do think that his sister does eventually takes over the Ten Rings. But I don't know what implications the Ten Rings will have under her leadership. I imagine so that, you know, the Ten Rings, you have Hydra, the Hand, all these shadowy organizations. They always kind of operate in the background, you know, and there's going to be some kind of point to where we're all going to go, oh, the Ten Rings were behind it. I just don't know what that's going to be. So we'll see.
I think what they did, going back to what you mentioned earlier about the Mandarin kind of retconning, fixing that, I think that was probably the best possible way they could handle that whole that whole situation. And now that that they're both kind of out of the picture and it's just going to be Shang-Chi and his sister, I think that kind of clears that side of the table with all those characters up lot.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the mother character, the sort of emotional core of the movie, the sort of the points on which the events for these characters really turn are two. One is Tony Leung's character meets Shang-Chi's mother, whose name I cannot remember now.
I believe it's Li.
Thank you. See, I knew it was a really hard one to remember. And as they meet, they fight, and they have one of those sequences, like you mentioned, where as they fight, they exchange these looks, and it's this wonderful sequence where they are essentially falling for each other as they realize their matches for one another in more than just combat. Yeah. And that begins the emotional redemption for the father character, and then that ends when the mother is tragically killed as the result of her husband's actions, his evil deeds in the past, some victims of his in the past essentially visit revenge upon his family and end up killing his wife, the mother of Shang-Chi, and his sister. And that's the other kind of emotional turning point for all of them. The father goes back to his crime lord ways, his supervillain ways, and his son begins training to be an assassin at the age of seven. For the next several years, he and his sister are in his father's compound, basically learning how to murder real good, and that shapes them both in ways that carry through the rest of the film and the rest of their story. And, you know, even though we only get like little glimpses of the mother, it's so clear that her, you know, she's such a presence for all of the characters. Like her loss is, you know, it haunts the film. It haunts all of these characters. It's driving all of these characters in different ways. And I really liked that. I know that Disney is well versed in the dead parent motivation.
Always killing off moms.
That's certainly something that, you know, there's a definitely colors they're familiar with painting with. So I get that it's not necessarily trotting new ground, but I was affected by the story of the mother in this movie. I thought that I felt how profoundly her loss was felt by these characters, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think anytime, if I was to ever watch a Disney movie and both parents are alive, I'm just going to be like, oh, this movie's going to suck. But, you know, yeah, what's great is we see Li so important and essential to the movie, but all through flashbacks, and we're kind of pieced together the importance of what she meant to Shang-Chi, what she meant to her to when Wu, the dad, and then what she meant to the sister. And we don't get too much of it in terms of the sister. I think the point of it was that the sister always felt like the ostracized one, because, I mean, very typical in traditional Asian families, like all about the son, you know, firstborn son or whatever. So all the knowledge and royalties and stuff like that gets passed down to the son. So the daughter, the sister has always felt like kind of an outsider kind of thing. What I really took out of the mom, you know, how I characterize it, is that she really did bring that balance, because I think if the mom wasn't around, first of all, I mean, the fighting styles with Wenwu and Li, she's open palm, you know, and
yes,
Wenwu is close fist. And so she's always very defensive and being able to deflect his attacks. It's that yin and yang kind of philosophy that is sprinkled throughout the movie. And so she passes that down to Shang-Chi. And then we see that kind of saying, like, you're your father, you know, but you're also the heart of a dragon, which is what she's from. She's being part god, or that's where her background is. So Shang-Chi is obviously a combination of both his dad and mom. I mean, that's a no-brainer. But it's like one of those things where you have the skill set and maybe the aggression, again, left to be seen in terms of what Shang-Chi is really about, but also like the benevolence of his mom. And so we're going to see definitely Shang-Chi have moments where he needs to think about what his mom taught him when he was younger, especially when it comes to those moral issues and moral questions that I imagine they're going to present in front of him. So I don't think this will be the last time we see Li. You're probably going to see her in different scenes in future movies, the actor Fa La Chen. So they'll bring her in into like his, you know, he'll probably have a choice and he'll close his eyes and it's going to cut to a scene of her. And then she's going to be talking to like her son, Shang-Chi. And she'd be like, you know, how are you, my son? You know, I taught you better. I taught you well, you know, that kind of thing. I just imagine that's going to be in future movies.
Yeah, I could see that. She was so clearly the moral heart of the movie. And, you know, you could see how hard that line he gave to his father when they were, you know, early on in their confrontation at the end of the movie. He says to his father something along the lines of, you know, even if you were able to actually recover her from the dead, which is what his father seeks to do at the end, he becomes delusional. Even if you were able to bring her back, like, she wouldn't want to have anything to do with the person you are.
Man, that set him off. He's like, oh, you said that. And then he uppercutted the shit out of him.
Yeah, you get punched into the river. And I think there's some implication that there is some additional the thing that he got from his mother, the thing that his power is that he's a good person, that he has a heart and a conscience. That's what sets him apart from his father. Mm-hmm. And I think that based on the way that, again, the things that happened at the end where the dragon guardian responds to him, to his presence, the rings respond to him at some point, like he's got something inside him going on. He's got some, you know, whether it's from his mother or there's something else at work going on in the sort of the larger mythos of Marvel. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something at work inside him, and his mother is the kind of the moral voice of whatever that is.
Yeah, definitely. I could definitely see that. And, you know, mom's always, you know, with all the Marvel superheroes, they always kind of reference their parents or try to understand and appreciate their parents. We see that with Tony Stark. And I do draw a lot of parallels between Shang-Chi's character arc with Tony Stark's. And there's a lot of linkages there, because we see Stark Tower in the little wall that his auntie kind of is going through. Obviously, the Mandarin tie-in and Trevor Slattery. What else is there? There was one more that's leaving my head. But yeah, there's that tie-in. And I just feel like Shang-Chi will be that common denominator for phase four.
Yeah, I hope so. I found him really compelling. I mean, I know we didn't, and we said we liked him. But Simu Liu did such a good job, I think, with this role, and seemingly, for me at least, coming kind of out of nowhere. I'm very much looking forward to seeing more of him in kind of phase four as we go forward. Did anything not work for you in the movie, or was there anything that kind of didn't meet or exceed expectations?
Yeah. I would say I would have liked to see a little bit more of an internal struggle with Shang-Chi when it came to his decision to kill his dad. I just felt like that was something where we see him staring out and Katie sits down next to him. She's like, "Hey, what you thinking?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm going to kill my dad." And she's like, "Oh," and he just like gets up and walks away. And she's like, "Oh, alrighty." But I mean, I got to imagine that's a much tougher decision. We get it. Like, that's the right thing, if you will, that he has to do. But I think that was the one thing I would have liked to have been explored a little more, at least for him to wrestle it. And same thing with just his reconciliation with his sister. I got to imagine that his sister isn't so easy to forgive him. Yes, he doesn't let go of her when the dragon's trying to eat her. But I'm sure there's more to that. So that's not necessarily against the film. I think that's just a little nitpicky. But I'm sure that we're going to see more of that tension in future films or in future shows or whatever future iterations Marvel has planned. And then the other thing is, I mean, it was an amazing BMW endorsement this whole movie. There were two major moments where the BMW car was so heavily featured. I'm like, all right, BMW, I could see you definitely invested some money into this movie,
right? You gotta love those the really obvious corporate feces just smeared all over the screen.
I
hear you. I think for me too, I know they had to kind of keep this relatively lean by Marvel standards, only 2 hours and 12 minutes, but I would have liked a little bit more with the brother-sister relationship. Like, yeah. I think they did a really good job with very little in a very short span of time with these little touches, building an emotional bond between father and son, between mother and son. And I didn't feel as strongly about the link between brother and sister. And yeah. I think that is something that I hope they work on going forward, because they certainly could. They're both presumably going to be appearing in at least one more movie together.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So I think they'll have opportunities to do that I hope they take, because I think on an emotional level, that was the relationship that I felt like not only did I not feel like it got fleshed out enough, but yeah, like you said, I felt like the resolution to their conflict wasn't quite sufficient. That's probably it though, in terms of, in terms of big criticisms. I think, you know, big props to the action overall, how they filmed it. I think at the very end, as a lot of Marvel movies do, when it just becomes like an enormous CGI spectacle, I thought they did a better than usual job of making sure everything was still coherent and interesting to look at. But there were a couple of times when I just kind of lost the thread of exactly what was happening. Like, I think at one point there were some flying creatures dropping some glowing orbs into the bad guy dragon. I don't know what those were, where those came from. If that was established earlier, I missed it.
Those were souls. Souls,
right,
I believe.
Right. Those were all the souls that it was eating. Okay. I gotcha. So at the time, like the way it looked almost like it was being attacked. Like those were like bombs being dropped into its throat or something. And there were a couple of times in the whole mass of tentacles and water and everything that I probably lost a little bit of what was going on. But other than that, I thought the action was shot super coherently. And yeah, I just didn't really have a lot of things that didn't work for me. It was well above average in terms of Marvel movies, I think.
I think initially my thoughts are when the big demon thing came out of the introduction of like those demons itself. I felt my first thought was like, okay, well, that's interesting. Like, where is this coming from? Like, I thought the bad guy was the dad, but it seems like there's this greater existential threat that just that they just threw in front of us. Like, we just had to accept. So at first I was kind of like, okay, this is kind of ridiculous. But then after Shang-Chi does that Kamehameha move where he like injects the rings inside the thing and he like, you know, does a whole hand thing and like makes it explode. I think that was them showing us this is the, you know, capacity and the capability of Shang-Chi that for us to believe he's up at this upper echelon of Avenger, you know, powers. Because I think if he just had the rings and we didn't see him really do anything with it, we'd be like, oh man, he's way ahead of, you know, way over his head with this whole Avengers thing, because who knows, right? But then I think they had that to be like, oh, okay, he's got some, you know, power behind
him. He has to single-handedly save all of existence, definitely. And I think that it also establishes, like, the rings themselves are something special, because we've gotten, like, okay, the only thing that can hurt these awful little flying devil things are, like, dragon scale enhanced weapons, like nothing else affects these things. And then this like big enormous boss demon comes flying out and everyone's like, well, Jesus Christ, what do we do? Well, don't worry, this guy's got 10 magic rings, they're gonna fuck shit up. So that is, you know, gonna build in so the sort of mystery of what are these things really, where did they come from, and what else can they do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm really curious about.
All right. Well, I think that will wrap up our discussion for the main movie, unless you have any other like thoughts, notes, big picture kind of stuff you want to share. We'll come back and chat the post-credit scene. Anything else you wanted to touch on?
I that's good. We could talk about I'm excited to talk about the post-credits.
All right. Well, thank you again for joining me, Raymond. Do you have any social media you want to plug? Do you want to plug your other pods again?
Sure. Yeah. So my podcast is called Real Asian Podcast. That's spelled R-E-E-L, Asian Podcast. You can find us on Instagram at Real Asian Podcast. My personal is on there. You can follow me if you want to do other things, but most of my time is on the podcast. And if you don't know, we're basically a movie discussion podcast that really takes a look at Asian-centric movies, mostly Asian-American, but not always Asian-American. And we talk about sometimes the intersection of the film itself, but also the society at large. So we have those fun discussions in terms of what it means. That is our podcast. So come check us out. We're available on all the platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon. What's the other one? Google Podcasts, all those.
Pocket Casts, all that.
Pocket Casts, definitely. Yep. You can find us on there.
Awesome. Well, I will definitely check out that show. That sounds great. Anything else you want to plug?
Last thing, we did do our own episode of Shang-Chi as well, which is coming out soon. So we had a recording recently, so we'll have another, you know, robust conversation about Shang-Chi. A lot of people are. It is a huge thing. So I'm really glad to see this movie have an impact that it does.
Me too. I'm really happy that this movie seems to be killing it at the box office and people are responding well to it, because I want to see more movies like this out of Marvel.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Raymond, for joining me. And thank you, everyone, for joining us for another episode. And remember, we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network. Please subscribe to Podcast 616 and give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to help out our network as a whole, please consider supporting us on Patreon if you go to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. Shang-Chi is not all we're discussing here, so we'll give you a taste of what you might have missed on the network in just a moment, and we'll see you next time on Podcast 616 when we invite you to join us once again as we journey into the unknown and ponder the question, what if?
Elsewhere on We Made This. Frame to Frame.
Being John Malkovich, I think, is probably the most original film I will ever see, because I had absolutely no idea what was going to come next. Then when it did come, I was like, Okay, right, that makes sense.
Well, it makes sense being a loaded term in the context of this film.
Well, yeah. In any other film, it'd be ridiculous. Like, oh, what, we're suddenly going through John Malkovich's subconscious whilst one person's trying to shoot another. Like, it's ridiculous, but it makes sense within the context of the film. I pretty much agree with everything that you were saying about it being the exploitation of celebrity. That was my sort of big takeaway. And the thing I was thinking, oh yes, I'll be able to say this on the podcast and it will sound smart, was that they get their 15 minutes of fame. But...
Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah, I mean, this is the beauty of us not talking about ahead of time, right?
Yeah, is it?
Pick a disc.
Was that kind of your entry into music as well? So did you learn a lot about music because of what your parents' records collection was then? Or?
Oh, of course. They were the first DJs in my life. I mean, you know, what they listened to was gospel to me. And then I started learning my own music through listening to albums on the radio, listening to stuff that my friends would dub a cassette copy. Oh, you got to hear this album. And they would dub a couple songs and make mixtapes. And then passing mixtapes around between friends to kind of introduce each other to new bands. But the bands that I listened to in my youngest years, my childhood, are the ones that I still look back at with just some, because they helped really shape and form who I am as a music fan.
Rarely Going, an animated Star Trek podcast.
They've gone through that script and went, yep, that's fine. And that's been approved by, you know, the executive producers, the writing room. There's a lot of people that have had to go through this episode before it's got to air. And, you know, the fact that they can have something like that where it can be a little bit self-critical of the thing is good. You know, Star Trek can often be classed as taking itself a little bit too seriously. And I think something like that, you know, the fact that people go, yeah, you know what, that's fair point. And they're probably, you know, people are aware of the criticism, the positive things. You know, people are basing Star Trek around a lot of some of these decisions and leaning into that. So I think that, you know, it shows that the writers are self-aware, certainly. And, you know, that also extends out with the Lower Decks kind of writing room too.
Yeah, fair.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.
Okay, so post-credits. We got a post-credit sequence here. First one of the two is a kind of mid-credit sequence where Wong returns to Earth and calls Sean and Katie to the sanctuary, I think is where, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where he takes them.
Yeah.
And as they enter, they're examining the rings. Captain Marvel, Bruce Banner, Wong are examining the 10 rings and they can't really make heads or tails of what's going on with them. And it kind of ends with saying that when the 10 rings lit up and at Shang-Chi's command, when he took control of them, a sort of beacon was let out by the rings, and it seems like they're still broadcasting, and we don't learn where they are broadcasting to. The question is asked.
And when it's asked,
Captain Marvel's like, oh, I gotta go.
Yeah, I know, right? Peace. Sorry. Yeah.
And Bruce Banner's like, ha, we like keeping you in the dark. Welcome to the team. And
yeah, right. Yeah.
And then Wong's like, yep, that's it. We're out of here. And then they all go do karaoke.
Yeah. That was a great scene. Lots to unpack. I mean, I can't imagine Reddit is just blowing up with theories. I got to imagine. I read some obviously are very entertaining, but you know, so I mentioned before, you know, where Captain Marvel, you know, ties into all this. My first thought when I saw Captain Marvel was, given all her history and experience traveling all across the universe on different alien planets, for her to even say, I don't even know what this thing is, not on my radar, you know, leads me to believe, okay, this is something way beyond this universe. And then again, we kind of tie it back to like the multiverse, which is a thing now that we were introduced with Loki. So that to me says like, if Captain Marvel doesn't even know what this thing is, then who knows, right? There may have some kind of impact with the Eternals. You know, that the rings fell to Earth in a crater. So did that happen when the Eternals came into play? Who knows? I think there's that. And then I'm also curious, you know, first thing I noticed is that it was Bruce Banner and not Smart Hulk or Hulk.
Yeah, not right? Professor Hulk.
Not right. Professor Hulk. So what happened there? He still got the sling, which to me kind of says like, okay, this obviously happened shortly after Endgame. So where it all ties in is going to be really
I'm a little fuzzy in my head at this point. Was Professor Hulk a choice? Like,
yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, he could just be choosing not to do that.
I believe in Endgame. In Endgame, he's Professor Hulk, and he says that he was able to put the brawn and the brain together. And so he's able to be permanently Hulk, but still have Bruce Banner, like, intellect and articulation. So he's not just smashing everything all the time. But for him to go back into Bruce Banner kind of makes me wonder, is there no more Hulk now? Because, he could have just chose not to be Hulk.
He might have just needed to fit into a smaller lab. You never know.
that's very possible. That's very possible. So there's that question as well. The beacon thing. I mean, whenever they show, when they showed the beacon in terms of what it looked like, it looked very similar to the quantum realm. It looked very similar to the multiverse cosmic area that we saw when in Loki in the Citadel.
Yeah.
It looked all very similar. So I gotta imagine that beacon is a call to something. Is it a call to the Celestials? Is it a call to the Deviants or some greater power? I'm not quite sure.
But very really curious, you know, because it only activates when he takes them over. Like when they change color, that's when the beacon activates. So for 1,000 years before, when his father was wielding them, this beacon never went off. And now, as soon as he takes command of them, takes possession of them, this beacon goes off. Like that's curious to me too. Like I'm wondering if there's something specific about who he is or what he is that sets this off.
And we know that there's multiple Kangs out there. We know that there's different Kangs jumping throughout universe seeking power. And so is Kang drawn, or is he going to be attracted to that beacon? Possibly. And so that kind of kickstarts the next impending doom in the MCU. So many things. So intriguing.
Yeah. And especially with, you know, the age of them, you know, his father was in possession of them for 1,000 years, but they say they're much, much older than that. We know that the Eternals have been on Earth for thousands of years. So, I would be surprised if there isn't some tie-in at the end of the day with whatever we learn in the next movie that's coming out in a couple of months.
Oh man, I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm very excited for that one. I think I'm on that episode as well.
I mean, for one, we're assuming that Shang-Chi is part of the Avengers now. I have to say, like, it seems pretty easy to be an Avenger. It just seems like all it takes is someone to just acknowledge, like, "Hey, you're an Avenger," and it's like, "Oh, okay, that was it."
Right? It's like you don't seem like one of the baddies, and you have some incredible power and/or technology. Welcome
check,
to the
check. Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, going back to what we were talking about earlier, now that Katie got, you know, kind of pulled into the action too, like, what do you think? What do you think the implications for her are? Do you think that she is, you know, does she have some bigger role to play besides being a sidekick, essentially?
Well, we know she's got some fighting to her. She can shoot an arrow. So there's a possibility for her to become.
She's a badass. There's no doubt. There's no doubting her spirit.
Yeah, exactly. So there's definitely a possibility for her to have a lot more of a bigger role when it comes to like fighting. In terms of her relationship with Chang-Chi, again, we talked about maybe the developing relationship that comes along with that. I think for her, it's really open book. I feel she may, it's got to be something I can't, you know. And I feel as if her character is probably some tie into a comic book character that I kind of wish I maybe dug a little bit deeper on, but who knows?
Right. You sure. Know? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I hope she sticks around. I think she's a fun character as long as they continue to do the character justice, which I think they did in this movie. I think she'll be a welcome addition to whatever that comes next for her.
All right.
So what about the last scene? What happened there?
The post credits. So we see Xian Ling. I think that's her name. I might have butchered that too. But basically we see Shang-Chi's sister take over the Ten Rings organization. We see her building out her army. She's got a new, you know, empire that's in the works. What that means, well, immediately after that scene, it does say the Ten Rings will return. So that to us says, okay, well, they're obviously going to be sprinkled throughout the MCU. What kind of impact they will have, who knows? We know that, you know, there's Kree that's like that are walking around. I mean, I think, I don't know if Hydra is still a thing. I doubt it. But there's also Valentina, Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character. It's a super long name. Yep. So I feel like there's going to be some kind of tie-in with that because it fits kind of what they're about, like a shadowy organization, and that's kind of what Valentina is doing. So she may play a part in that.
Yeah. It'll certainly be another player in the, you know, expanding universe of shadowy organizations that are appearing on Marvel screens, both television and cinemas. Yeah. I don't think, at least I don't hope, I hope that they don't go in a sort of villain direction with her. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Do you think they might go villain, or do you think she'll be more of a sort of complicated neutral character?
I think more of a complicated neutral character. It will kind of play into where they will do things that are very borderline, where,
yeah,
you know, if it's Shang-Chi will have moments where he questions his sister in terms of what she's trying to do, and she may have to pull back a little bit at Shang-Chi's pleading. But I think they're not going to fall into that box of the typical hero where it's always everything is righteous in terms of what they do. I think they're definitely going to go right up to the line, but I also think they'll probably have an important role to develop the larger MCU storyline, where we'll look back this be like, yeah, the Ten Rings was very important in that decision. They were key. We're glad that the Ten Rings murdered that hero or that villain, even though everyone else is like, no, we should spare his life kind of thing. I feel like that would be my guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's certainly little hints based on, well, what she was doing. She started an underground fighting ring in her teenage years in Macau. And there's a line at one point where there's a bunch of bodies or someone's died, and she asks her brother if he's gone soft, and, you know, she clearly hasn't is the implication. So it would be, you know, while she certainly had no problem with fighting on the side of the quote unquote good guys against a world exterminating evil here and her father, mm-hmm. who she had a pretty complicated relationship to say the least. I don't think we can expect her to line up, you know, necessarily neatly with the agenda of the Avengers, let's say, on an average mm-hmm. daily basis. I think she's definitely going to have her own agenda, pursuing her own ends. Yep. And maybe sometimes when there's a world-threatening cataclysm, she'll line up on the side of the folks trying to stop that from happening. But otherwise, she's going to be doing her own thing for her own reasons.
Yep. Yeah. We're definitely got to see the development of how she's always been left out of certain things. And then she's going to say, you know, this is my opportunity to show everyone who didn't give me a chance. Like, I want to be the power player, you know, in this stage.
Absolutely. And that was kind of one of the things that I we're not going back into the meat of our discussion again, but I would have liked to see that fleshed out a little bit more with her character. And I hope we get to see some continued development of her character in follow-up stories.
Yep. A lot of theories out there. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely curious to see where we'll stand after the Eternals comes out. And then we've got a few movies to look forward to next year, as well as more of the series. So
yep.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Can't wait to see what they do next.